Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We must cut the spending. It is a matter of survival. That is a message I got from Montana Joe in Billings on the Montana Talks app earlier this morning. Yeah, she says we must cut the spending. It is a matter of survival. And cut the billions going to Ivy League schools when they already have tens of billions in their trust funds right now. For example, she says Harvard's endowment fund has $44.4 billion in it right now. I think it's even higher than that. That must be a number from last year or the year before. Charlie Kirk with Turning Point USA had this to say: the Ivy League is in total crisis right now. They stand to lose billions of dollars a year from taxpayers. Meanwhile, Harvard's endowment, $53 billion. Yale's endowment, $41.4 billion. Columbia's endowment, $14.8 billion. And then Charlie Kirk adds this: force them to use their endowments, end the scam. Yeah, I mean, you'd think the billions of dollars that are going to these corrupt Ivy League institutions back on the East Coast could instead be used to, you know, hire some full-time wildland firefighters out here in the West. Maybe it could be used to support federal law enforcement on our reservations here in Montana. I mean, so many other ways that those funds could be used instead of propping up these corrupted institutions back on the East Coast. I mean, Columbia especially, you know, Trump basically threatening to withhold $400 million to them for allowing these anti-Semitic barricades and blockades to take place on their campus. And now look at this. We talked about Mahmoud Khalil yesterday on this show. And some of the same Democrats who refused to rally around the family of Lake and Riley, some of the same Democrats who refused to stand up in support of the families of the victims of these, violent, horrific attacks by these criminal illegal aliens, boy, all of a sudden they're standing up and rallying around Mahmoud Khalil, who is not even an American citizen, who is here on a visa, who has the privilege, not the right, to be in the United States of America. I don't know if you guys saw this on CNN yesterday. Scott Jennings absolutely laid it down. They didn't even want him to be able to get his point across. He said this about Mahmoud Khalil and the group that he's a part of.
And I've certainly watched the abomination that's going on at Columbia and Barnard and other places. And I'll just tell you that
I'm not going to let you move on because this is...
I'll tell you why it's a threat to national security if you let me answer you.
Well, Scott.
You want me to answer you or not?
Okay.
All right. We'll get you the answer right after this. He lays it out fully. That's why they kept interrupting.
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Yeah, the Democrats want to shut down the government. The Democrats want to shut down the federal government. Where is all of the fear porn coverage? They're supposed to have all the government shut down. Oh, no. What if the government shuts down? Where's the fear porn coverage from the Montana media? I mean, if they thought the Republicans were about to shut down the government, you would see fear porn everywhere, every day for days. But now that the Democrats are openly basically saying that they're ready to shut down the government, no fear porn to be found in the Montana media right now. They're too busy with their tariff
fear porn right now, even though Ontario's premier is already pulling back on his claims that he was going to hike up electricity costs in New England. They now backed down after Donald Trump fired back on that front. But anyway, so much to talk about this morning here on this show. We've got the phone lines open for you. Yeah, Montana Joe and the message she sent earlier, we've got to cut the spending. It's a matter of survival. And yeah, why not cut the billions going to these Ivy League schools, that especially the ones that have allowed these anti-Semitic barricades to take place? Scott Jennings made such an incredible point on CNN yesterday. They were like, wait a minute, why are you going to take away the visa of this guy just because you don't like what he's saying? And Scott Jennings shot that down in an instant, and yet they still kept trying to interrupt him.
His organization says, we are dedicated fighting for the total eradication of Western civilization. Okay. He's not a citizen. He doesn't need to be
here.
Yeah, they kept interrupting him here. The organization this Mahmoud Khalil is a part of is dedicated to the eradication of Western civilization. Not just dedicated to the eradication of the United States. That includes Canada. That includes Europe, the UK, you name it, right? He's dedicated to the eradication of that. This is an insurgent on American soil, abusing his privilege to have a visa to be here in the first place. He needs to be sent back where he came from. And that's what Donald Trump is doing. But yet, look at the way the Democrats are rallying around that guy when they wouldn't rally around Laken Riley and so many other American victims of these criminals. All right, let's see. So much to talk about this morning. We got phone lines open for you, 406-294-0970. I mentioned, you know, congressional Democrats, they're likely to shut down the federal government here. Remember how we were always told, oh, it'd be so awful if Republicans shut down the government. Here's the Democrats getting ready to shut down the government. Yesterday, I caught up with Montana's Eastern District Congressman Troy Downing right after he got out of a House Republican conference meeting with Vice President J.D. Vance, talking about this spending bill in particular. And so I asked Congressman Downing, I said, hey, did anything interesting come out of that meeting that you just had with J.D. Vance?
Are you kidding? No, he literally just walked out of the room about 30 seconds ago. So, you know, it's really, really important to the president that we get the CR passed. And so that's why he sent the vice president down here to talk about it. And, you know, I hate CRs just like, you know, most of your listeners hate CRs. But, you know, we inherited this from the Biden administration, from the previous administration. And this is our only chance. And this actually, it's flat funding. We actually are saving money from the 2024 spending. And it just gives that flat funding so we have some runway so that we can actually start putting together our reconciliation bill and start delivering what everybody put us in here in office to do. Everything on the Trump agenda, everything that I ran on, everything that we ran on. So it's incredibly important that we get this through so that we can start to work on that reconciliation bill and start to deal with all of our priorities. And one thing that that he emphasized, which is really important to understand, is all this, you know, incredible work that DOGE has been doing, everything that they're uncovering, everything that we're seeing, but, you know, it's even beyond, we knew it was bad, but it's beyond what any of us expected. But all of that grinds to a halt if we have a government shutdown, and we can't allow that to happen. We need to keep the lights on, keep, you know, looking in the corners, keep doing what they're doing, and then codify that into law. And that's exactly what we're going to get to work doing. So that was the theme of what the vice president was just talking about. And I'll tell you, at this point, you know, today, there's nothing more important to the president than getting this passed.
Yeah, I saw Stephen Miller, his deputy chief of staff, said on X, Republicans must stand united and pass the continuing resolution. It is the only way to stop a giant Christmas tree omnibus that will empower Schumer and massively fund the radical left. Republicans must finally stick together to win. And it looks like they are sticking together. Even the Freedom Caucus now is backing this CR. Of course, President Trump has already come out in full support, saying that we've got to unite right now.
Freedom Caucus. We've got the Freedom Caucus backing it. We've got Club for Growth backing it. We've got these, you know, traditional, you know, fiscal hawks that are actually see that this is, it's not a perfect situation, but this is what we inherited, and this is how we actually start delivering. And we're not slowing anything down by a government shutdown. So it's not going to be the Republicans that shut down the government. It's going to be the Democrats if they do that, and it's going to put everything at a halt. We're going to hang that around Chuck Schumer's neck because we need to keep moving forward on everything that DOGE is doing and everything that we promised. And then the other thing I think it's just important for folks to know, a lot of this stuff that DOGE is doing and stopping this money from getting to the end user, that money is still, you know, floating in those departments. And so we need to get this through and then get a rescission package from the president so we can start clawing that money back.
All right. That was part of my conversation with Congressman Troy Downing. I want to air one more back and forth, and then we'll get to your phone calls. 294-0970.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I don't know if you guys saw this story. I put a story on our Montana Talks website yesterday. How many Montanans have to get up and go to work each day just to pay for the salary and benefits of one federal employee? Now, there's some great federal employees out there, and we're so thankful for them, right? And there's some important jobs being done by federal workers. You know, Border Patrol is one that comes right to mind, right? But look at how much the federal workforce has grown. Again, look at what Missoula did with their schools. They hired all these people using short-term, one-time COVID dollars. And then they were like, oh, well, I guess we got to fire 100 people. Well, maybe they should have used the money for one-time projects instead of long-term budget expansions. But see, that's what the left does. They never let a crisis go to waste. And they wanted to use – that's why Joe Biden wanted to keep the whole COVID stuff going, is because they didn't want to let a crisis go to waste. They wanted to keep America in crisis mode so they could keep piling on more spending, more bureaucracy. They could keep taking your money and giving it out to their buddies in the form of the green energy scam. I want to play an audio clip from Vince Cagnonese. He was filling in for Dan Bongino last Friday, and he broke down the latest jobs report. And he mentioned how many Americans have to go to work in the private sector just to pay for one federal employee. It really is must-hear audio. First, though, what about some of these layoffs when it comes to federal workers? I know there has been. Anyway, let me play just one more quick back and forth from my conversation with Montana's Eastern District Congressman Troy Downing.
Yeah, it's obvious tough decisions got to be made. I mean, we spent $402 billion just on net interest on the public debt since October alone. I mean, our country, you know, if we don't rein this in, is going to go bankrupt. Federal job cuts, obviously tough decisions have to be made. These federal job cuts, I know some of the cabinet members have been pushing back on some of these cuts. What do you see happening there with some of these federal workers?
Well, here's the thing, you know, obviously, nobody is happy about anybody losing a job, but, you know, there's a lot of fat in there, and we need to start figuring out, like, some of the, you know, the ideas that have been put out there that this is going to affect benefits. It's not affecting benefits. There's so much fat in these programs, and there's so much, so many programs, so many people that are not actually delivering the services. And so I think the important message to understand there is, as much as we, you know, some of these retoolings may be uncomfortable, We're going to figure this all out. We're going to be much more surgical about deciding, you know, what we need to, you know, keep and what needs to go, because we do need to, you know, reduce the size of government overall. And then at the end of the day, make sure that it's not affecting the actual delivery of services. It's not going to affect anybody on Medicare. It's not going to affect anybody on Medicaid. It's not going to affect our veterans. This is going to continue delivering everything that we've promised, but we're starting to go, you know, after those positions that, they're new or may not have been necessary. And we're going to continue looking at that and be much more surgical as we move forward.
All right, so we're going to be more surgical as we move forward was the response there from Congressman Downing, which is essentially what some of the cabinet secretaries have been saying and what Elon Musk and President Trump have been saying as well. But it also goes back to the broader point here, which is we've got to make mining in Montana great again. We've got to make our timber industry in Montana great again. We've got to start rocking the Bakken again and unleashing American energy again, which all the above is what President Trump is working to do right now. And here's the thing. Once we do that, imagine how much more revenue will then come in so that we can, instead of having firefighters that are seasonal workers, make them full-time workers with full-time benefits.
3 minute stations.
Which I know Tim Sheehy has been talking about. You know, why did they make seasonal trail maintenance workers full-time employees? If anybody should have been made a full-time employee instead of a seasonal employee, it should have been firefighters, right? But again, like, you are the ones that have to pay for all this stuff. We're $36 trillion in debt. We've been spending money like we're already in World War III, which Joe Biden almost got us into World War III. And we've got a $2 trillion annual deficit that Joe Biden left for President Trump right now. So something has to be done or our country is going to go bankrupt. And that's what brings me back to this great jobs report breakdown by Vince Colianese. In fact, I was trying to remember, how do you say Vince's name? He's come Monday, he's going to be the replacement for Dan Bongino. Dan Bongino is going to become the deputy director of the FBI. And Vince Colianese is going to be taking over for the Bongino show. And I was trying to think, how do you pronounce his name? So all I could think of was, well, that's Beef Bolognese. It's Beef Bolognese, but it's Vince Colianese. Listen to him break down the jobs report that the media was trying to dump on Friday.
There's a lot of good news here, a lot of good news. So let me just start with the headline. U.S. economy added 151,000 jobs in February, below expectations. That's Fox Business reporting here. That economists were hoping for 160,000 jobs in their estimates. It was instead at 151,000 jobs being added. The unemployment rate was 4.1%, slightly higher than economists' expectations that it would remain at 4%. But if you look into this data, there are some massive changes going on that are for the better, that are good for the country. I include the fact that we are not juicing the employment numbers anymore by using federal government jobs. One of the dirty secrets of the Biden era, kept because the legacy media, by and large, didn't share it with you, is how dependent the employment numbers were on government jobs. The government just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger as the Biden administration was trying to limit the damage of the economic headlines that they deserved. So they would use the government. They'd hire lots of people in order to pad the books. And that costs a lot of money. Do you know?
All right. And then that's where he shared the numbers that 80 Americans, 80 Montanans, if you want to localize this story, it takes 80 of you to get up and go to work every single day to pay for one federal employee. Now, of course, if you're in one of these high-wage mining jobs that we lost under the Biden regime, it'd probably take even fewer because the higher wages can then pay for more federal employees, right? But on average, it takes 80 Americans to get up and go to work every single day just to pay for one federal employee. You know, it's pretty crazy when you think about it from that perspective, but this is about fundamentally saving this country right now. and turning things around. We got a great guest coming up here in just a few minutes. Retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt served as the deputy U.S. military representative to NATO. And he's going to be speaking in Helena, Montana at the upcoming Lewis and Clark Lincoln Reagan dinner there. I'm looking forward to hearing his insight here in just a few minutes. First up, though, hey, let's chat with Darren Gobb. Darren Gobb is a retired lieutenant colonel, pilot. We've had the honor of having him on the show before. He's with the Lewis and Clark County Republicans. Darren, thanks for calling in. And, I was thinking you could probably give a much better introduction for our next guest than I could. So thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Yeah, I certainly could. Blaine and I have been working together on a number of things for a while now, so we've gotten to know each other pretty well, and conversations are typically something around piloting things, doing dumb things while piloting things, guns and explosives, all very popular.
I was going to say, with you being a pilot and then he was a pilot, I mean, you might have been Army and he might have been Air Force, but there's something about the camaraderie of pilots. It reminds me of the good pilot jokes, too. You know, how do you spot a pilot at the bar? He'll tell you. there's some great pilot jokes. Pilot jokes are like lawyer jokes. Everybody's got one at least, right?
Right, and they're usually all funny to some extent regardless, but, you know, our usual jokes are, what I flew, he usually put in the back of his aircraft. So, you know, you could put a couple Blackhawks in the back of a C-17 and go somewhere, but I would tell him, of course, that without my aircraft going to places like Afghanistan, he wouldn't have any purpose to flying a C-17. And, of course, you do that until 2 or 3 in the morning, and then you start over again at 5 a.m.
Yeah, those C-17s are remarkable. My last trip overseas, my last deployment, we flew a C-17 with our gear, and I loved it because we could lay out in that thing, stretch your legs out, and then we landed. I think we landed in maybe Newfoundland or something, and the pilots ordered pizza ahead for us. It was incredible. So we flew in style. But apparently, yeah, General Holt, before he was Deputy U.S. Military Representative to NATO, he, you know, commanded a whole C-17 outfit, and then he was in Kyrgyzstan when a coup took place or something as well, I'd read.
Yeah, he was busy over there doing that when you could say that all the different stands around Afghanistan and Russia were deciding that it was a great time to go into a little miniature revolt. And so, yeah, it's, you know, running logistics for NATO as a deputy advisor there, flying the C-17 around the world, but I think you said he was in all but 2 or 3 countries in the entire globe because of that work. So, you know, there's a variety of things, but he and I both decided it was time to punch out. We never knew each other, but it was time to retire and move on before we could get to the position where someone was asking us to directly violate the Constitution and our oaths. And we said, no, that's enough. And Blaine got out and started working on building private businesses. And I've been watching him do that for a while now. And I got together through some efforts I've been working on.
I'm really interested in hearing in his take, well, and your take as well, frankly, on Ukraine, especially given the big news we've just gotten here in the last 24 hours that Ukraine has now accepted a proposed ceasefire, and we're waiting to see what Russia has to say about the ceasefire. So stand by, Darren Gobb. We'll get to you and the general right up here.
This is where Montana talks at. With Lane Nordlund.
A bearish report out yesterday from USDA on the wheat front, the March crop production and World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates report, which raised U.S. wheat ending stocks to 819 million bushels, up from 794 million in February. The report cut exports, though, to 835 million bushels. The average farm gate price also dropped to $5.50 a bushel. On the global front, wheat ending stocks also increased to 260 million metric tons, with world production now estimated at just over 797 million metric tons. Russia's production saw a slight bump to 81.6 million metric tons, while Ukraine's wheat production was raised to 23.4 million. Australia Australia saw a significant production boost to 34.11 million metric tons, with exports increasing to 26 million. Meanwhile, Russian wheat exports were trimmed to 45 million metric tons. Ukraine's remained steady at 15.5 million. And yesterday, a Miles City Livestock Commission, over 700 head of cattle sold. Slaughter cows saw mostly steady to higher prices, priced anywhere from $110 to $149 a hundredweight. Slaughter bulls, $131 up to $181 a hundredweight. I'm Lane Northland.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, jumping right back into it here. Yeah, we should be getting a phone call here from retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt here any second, or Darren, if you want to shoot him a quick note with our studio number, the same studio number you called. Yeah, we don't have him on the phone line yet here, but yeah, he can call that same studio number you called there. But Darren, while we anticipate the phone call from General Holt, first, give us the details on when the Lincoln-Reagan dinner has taken place in Lewis and Clark County, and hopefully people can still buy tickets.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, it's Sunday, March 23rd is the date at the Helena Civic Center, and that can't be missed here in Helena. Of course, it's the what looks like a giant mosque, unfortunately.
Right
in the middle of town. And you can go to 406tix.com, T-I-X.com. There, we're the number two thing on the list. And that's an easy place to come and get them, of course. Brigadier General Retired Blaine Holt, U.S. Air Force retired, will be our keynote speaker. He was a deputy advisor to NATO. I'll be talking a little bit about local action that leads to national consequences, positive work. Helena is a tough nut to crack when it comes to finding good folks to work in the legislature for positive conservative gains that are needed. So we're going to keep fighting and doing that. There will be a live and silent auction dinner. Most of the usual things, dessert auction as well, that always goes really, really well. We have some professional bakers and cooks and things doing things, and that's the gist of it. The doors open at 4:30 for cocktails, and then the dinner is served at 5:45, and we look forward to seeing as many people there as we can. The theme is of the golden age of Montana.
What's your take on the Ukraine situation right now? I think, you know, the American people sent a clear message. Look, we're tired of spending billions of our dollars. And frankly, look, the war never would have started if Donald J. Trump had been president in 2021 anyway. But nonetheless, now Ukraine has accepted the ceasefire deal. Everything appears to be on track, just as I, had kind of suspected over a week ago, despite the blow up in the Oval Office. What's your take on the situation?
Yeah, I would say a very positive move in the end, regardless. I mean, the goal is to just stop a war that's killing people by the thousands with no purpose. And if we can get to that, then we can get to negotiations. Let's stop that for 30 days, at least, hopefully forever. But we'll do that first, get to the negotiations phase, and find out that both of these countries have a lot to lose still if they just continue doing this, which it looks like World War One in 2025. No one's really going anywhere making significant gains, but a lot of people are dying. And for what? There really is no reason for it. And like you said, it never would have started if Biden and people before him had simply said, no, we're not going to pursue Ukraine as a member of NATO. They don't qualify. They shouldn't be part of it anyways. And Russia's sick of seeing NATO encroach on their boundaries. And we can agree or disagree, but in the end, that's how Russia sees it. And they're the ones that are calling the shots in this. So we have to acknowledge what they're thinking and why.
Well, so, even before then, it was amazing how here was President Trump, you know, warning Europe, don't become dependent on Russia for your energy. And meanwhile, the Russians were funneling money into environmental groups here in America and Europe to undermine American energy security, opposing the DAPL pipeline, opposing the Keystone pipeline, opposing fracking. And now we've got, you know, the New England states of America that are even getting gas from Russia right now. And so the Biden regime, like, totally, and the Europeans themselves, the Europeans, as Scott Jennings also pointed out on CNN, were giving more money last year to Russia than they were giving to Ukraine. But yet they want to lecture us about who's supporting Ukraine or not, right?
Right, yeah. We seem to forget that energy security is national security, and it's used as leverage in so many ways. There's a lot of the conflicts in the world are, you know, really being fought over how do you route pipelines? Which country gets it? What port does it go to? And as a result of that, who benefits the most? And that's kind of like the hidden agenda behind the agenda. Does that pipeline go through Azerbaijan and Turkey, or does it go through Iran? Does it go through other nations? And that's driving a lot of what we're seeing. And that's part of what drove you, what's driving Ukraine in a way, too, is Russia cut off a lot of what they were doing using energy pipelines through Ukraine. Ukraine was largely stealing that energy and selling it on the black market and making a lot of money. This is part of the reason why Russia built the Nord Stream to go directly to Europe instead of going through Ukraine. And all of this over time built up to the point where Russia just said, no, if you're going to keep moving NATO east on us, you're going to keep using energy against us, we're going to use it against you, and here we are. So hopefully we can end this and we can actually get economic ties in place, positive economic ties in place that can allow Ukraine to rebuild. And maybe they can join the European Union and keep them tied to Europe through trade and not worry about the NATO alliance piece, because that is a bright red line for Russia that they're just not going to tolerate. If we know that, then why do we, then we don't even have to approach that topic.
I also think it ends up kind of weakening and watering down NATO. It reminds me like some of these organizations that you'll see even here in Montana, like, for example, the Billings Chamber of Commerce, for example. Why does a Chamber of Commerce get started? You get started to be an advocate for business, for the private sector, for entrepreneurs, right? But then what do organizations want to do? Well, they want to grow their membership list, and they want more people to be paying fees and being part of their organization. And then now the organization has grown so much. Well, you got these nonprofits that are a part of it. And then the nonprofits are the ones that call the shots, and they just want to spend more of our tax dollars, which goes against the interests of the business community and the entrepreneurs. And so I use that as kind of a local analogy to point out how, like the same NATO countries that aren't ponying up their share of money to actually strengthen NATO, like Donald Trump called on them to do, are the same ones that that then want to water it down by including more members of other member nations.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I was over there in Europe, I was running aviation task forces around about 7 countries in Eastern Europe, and I got to talk a lot, not only to the military on the ground, but some of the national leadership, because these countries are pretty small. They're very accessible to Americans. And they know more about what's going on than I think we give them credit for. And they're tired of the fact that they see themselves often as this still a buffer zone between an aggressive Russia and Western Europe, and Western Europe is content to let them be that and not fund for their own defense. And even hearing this conversation about we're going to expand our industrial base, our military base, and increase our own ability to defend ourselves, that's a positive statement that I hope is followed by action. But you can't just say it one day and the next day it starts. I mean, you're talking about a multi-year project that may or may not survive another election. So it gets old being really kind of NATO's only real true threat to anybody who's coming at Europe. they should not be relying on us.
It's just a reminder of how much our country is being taken for granted and yet still being disrespected. You know, they throw these tariffs at us, but then, oh, Donald Trump wants to throw one back at them, and they clutch their pearls. We are still, I wonder if we got our time, we might have gotten our time zones crossed here, maybe in scheduling General Blaine Holt, because we haven't gotten his phone call yet, but that's all right, because, you know, Darren Gobb, I know you're a retired lieutenant colonel. We've seen you on Fox News several times. You've got a group called Restore Liberty, and so you speak out on a lot of these, you know, foreign policy issues. What do you anticipate General Holt speaking about when he speaks at the Lewis and Clark Lincoln Reagan dinner later this month?
Yeah, well, I did text him, and I also called his texted his publicist.
He's on now.
We're looking forward to him.
Yeah, we got him on the phone lines now, so I'll get to him right after the break. But with less than a minute to go till the break, What do you think? Give your pitch to folks across Montana on what they're going to get a chance to hear from General Holt at the Lincoln Reagan.
Hey, what you're going to hear is, the status of the world, how the countries are tied together, what they're doing, why they're doing it, and how we as America can lead the way towards a more peaceful and prosperous future by understanding what it is that is driving different nations to make these decisions and what we need to do both nationally and locally to win the fight for liberty.
A global sit-rep and then a local action plan. I like that. All right. Well, we'll get the global sit-rep here from retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt, who served as Deputy U.S. Military Representative to NATO. He's now with us on the phone lines. We'll get to the general right after this, right here with Montana Talks. And then coming up on Thursday's show, the full hour taking your phone calls. We've got leadership of both parties talking about the legislature during the transmittal break.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, that worked out great. General Holt had a business meeting that went long, but that's all right because we got to catch up with Darren Gobb. Always plenty of topics that we can cover with Darren. And it was a nice preview for the general's appearance coming up later this month in Helena, Montana. General Holt, great to have you here on Montana Talks. You're going to be talking about the golden age of America, the golden age of Montana. Give us your global sit rep, I guess. Is that a good starting point?
Absolutely. So, you know, that night, I believe we're going to end on a positive. There's a lot of really good things happening right now in the front parts of this new administration. But globally, we're going to see some really serious challenges. First off, and this is the dark part of the conversation, is we have never been closer to a thing called World War III than we are right now. And I know that the Trump administration understands this. I know they're working overtime to try to de-escalate and defuse this. But there are many geopolitical plates, if you will, that are smashing into each other. The front part of this right now, you would have to look at the Ukrainian war and this move towards a ceasefire agreement that they might have gotten the Ukrainians to say, yes, we'll do that on the same strange morning that they did a 300-drone strike on Moscow, but that the Russians probably won't say yes to that unless there's some serious economic leverage brought into Moscow tomorrow or the next day when Secretary Rubio and Steve Witkoff go there, Ambassador Witkoff. So what does that mean? It means that the Russians want out of this war, too. They need access to European markets. If we can set that up, maybe they'll be amenable to a ceasefire. But what I suspect is that they might just be ready to go to final negotiations and a peace agreement immediately, meaning forget the ceasefire. Let's just talk about what the end state looks like. Those would be two good situations. The bad situation is Russia says, we're winning the war, we're going to keep winning the war, and we're not really interested in anybody negotiating with us at this point. I know that we have leverage to maybe dissuade them from going down that path,
But we'll just have to see. I just caught a 90-minute discussion with Judge Napolitano and some other YouTubers in person with Foreign Minister Lavrov, and I was very encouraged by what I heard in the discussion. So we have a good chance there. Down in the Middle East, you're going to see Russian and American cooperation on Syria, the new hot spot that was created by Erdogan in Turkey. They are now massacring Christians. Up to 7,000 Christians may have been massacred by the Al-Qaeda force there that was spawned by a NATO member, no less, in Turkey. And the Russians are actually opening up their military bases that they have there to asylum-seeking Christians. And so it's a very, very dangerous situation. And then going further south, you've got the IDF and the Israelis that look like they're probably at the end of the agreement with Hamas. Maybe there's an extension out there, but it looks like it's probably going to go back to military operations because Hamas is a terrorist organization, not a good faith partner in negotiating anything. And they're probably going to have to be dealt with militarily, and we'll save whoever we can. And then you move to China. China bears considerable watching because they're absolutely imploding at the speed of heat. You have banks failing left and right by the hundreds in China. You've got palace intrigue with Xi Jinping potentially facing action from his own People's Liberation Army. And you can see where a very volatile and vulnerable Chinese Communist Party may do kind of a wag the dog and take their problems out by launching attacks in any direction. We just don't know. So there's the world sit rep. The good news is we have a president who believes in a demilitarized foreign policy first and working out issues by other means before you get to the gun.
Wow, that's fascinating insight. I love the fact that these Ukraine talks have been taking place in Saudi Arabia, because to me that sends a powerful message to the terrorists in Tehran, and also hopefully trying to cause some separation there, because it just seems like Biden united the entire world against us.
You know who else it sends a message to? It sends a message to the Europeans who are rolling up their democracies. You look at what's going on in Romania, and they just canceled the popular presidential candidate because the EU doesn't like him. So, you know, Vice President Vance called them out for their erasure of freedom of speech.
Yeah.
And they're kicking in doors in the UK, Germany, France, of people who dissent with the government. Well, those aren't Western values. And so by holding the talks in Saudi Arabia, you're actually sending a message that, listen, if you're not aligned with our values and you're openly stating that you want Zelensky just to do more weapons and more war with over 1.5 million possibly dead, we're not on board, and we're going to do this a different way. And so, you know, the Europeans and our so-called NATO allied partners are they're impediments right now to peace, and that's very alarming.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, just that sit rep alone is enough to tell our listeners, man, you're going to want to be at that Lewis and Clark County Republican Lincoln Reagan dinner here later this month to go see a retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt. General, thanks for your time this morning. Appreciate it. About 20 seconds to go. Anything else you want to tell folks across Montana?
I promise in my speech, if you'll come, I'll end on a positive, because we've got some glorious days in front of us. And I can't wait to come to Montana and spend time with the community.
All right. Well, we look forward to having you in Big Sky Country. And it's not too far of a drive. He's just right down the road in Idaho. So I know folks are going to look forward to hearing from you. All right, General, thanks for your time. And big thanks to Darren Gobb as well. Appreciate it. Tomorrow, we're going to have the legislative update for the full hour, taking your calls. We've got the Democrat House Minority Whip and the Republican Senate President for the full hour Thursday.